Hi, Ken here. In nearly all of our podcasts, you hear students asking questions and their interaction with me. Many listeners find these exchanges illuminating because what is being asked is often exactly what is on their minds. If you find these conversations helpful, please make a donation at unfetteredmind.org/donate so we can maintain and expand our website. Thanks.
Unfettered Mind, Meeting What Arises.
I just want to know what you're going to say about Mother's Day.
Oh, you want to know what I was going to say about Mother's Day? Well, why do you want to know that?
Curious.
Oh, no, that kills cats. you have to go a step further than that. You're on the way.
Okay. I get through my experience, but I'm curious what it is that you prepare today to talk about.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start off in a very strange place. This is a book of poetry by Robinson Jeffers, who's a fairly dark guy. And what will you leave me, my ain mother dear? My dear son, now tell me, oh. The curse of hell from me shall you bear. Mither. The curse of hell from me shall you hear. Sick counsels you gave to me, oh. That's pretty dark. Now, why would I start there? Well, we have on the other side of the scale teachings in the Tibetan tradition, which says that regard all sentient beings as your mother or your grandmother, same diff. And recall the extraordinary kindness that that your mother has done for you, extended to you or whatever. And so here we have two totally polar opposites. And this is kind of the postmodern dilemma. Because we have all of these different perspectives on things, and like, which one do we take? Because in earlier societies, one very, very rarely thought negatively of one's parents. It didn't happen very often. If one had a difficult upbringing, that was just your upbringing. And I remember Jamgon Kontrol the Great, who was a 19th century teacher in Tibet. No, this was in reference to his father. His father was a Bun priest and was extremely strict with him. I mean, really, really strict. He was so strict that we would definitely call it abuse today. No question. When he was sitting in meditation, if he moved, he was just beaten. And he said later in his life, I did learn how to sit still. But he never, there's no sense that he thought negatively of his father. That was just how his father brought him up. But throughout the 20th century and stuff, we've come to see that there are certain things which are more helpful to children, certain things that are less helpful to children. So the whole view of child rearing and how a child should be raised, and hence the whole view of parenthood, has changed very significantly. And there are all kinds of opinions about this, of, you know, what's the right way and what isn't. And what this has done, interestingly enough, is made it possible for a lot of people to hold their parents responsible for how they are. So we went from one extreme in which you had a certain philosophy of parenting or mothering, which may have been one or the other, but that was just how it was for you and you took responsibility for your life. And on the other is we have many other, all kinds of ideas about how, and if your mother doesn't do it right, then she's responsible for how you are. And this, again, this is in context with a father, but I remember a student of mine who is a successful business consultant from Orange County. And he came to me once and said, you know, my son, who's in his teens at this point, you know what he said to me the other day? He said, Dad, do you know what a mistake you just made in parenting? Do you know how many years of therapy it's going to take me to work through this? And he said, what do you do when your son says that? And he was a genuine question. I said, it's very simple. You look at him and you say, you're right. I screwed up. Now it's your problem. Said, no, I couldn't say that. But this is where I've come out on this. We are raised a certain way, and it may be better. We may have had good parents. That's fine. Good mothers. Or it may not have. I heard a report on NPR that brought this all home to me. I found it quite amazing. I came in the middle of this, but it was a brother and sister, and they were well into their adult years. They were 40 or 50 or so. And describing their mother, I think they grew up in Ohio or Oklahoma or somewhere. Now, this was not a good mother, very, very clearly. And there are all kinds of things they were relating, but the one that stuck in my mind was, and she was a single parent. The father had died when they were very young. And she would say to her children, you know, when your father died, all my friends told me to put you in an orphanage, and I didn't. And that was the biggest mistake of my life. Like, what do you do? Well, when she was about 30 years old, the sister in this family just let loose on her mother about all the ways that she had been a terrible parent. And, you know, I just gave you one example, but there was a long list. And here's what happened. The mother just looked at her completely stunned. Sat down on a chair and started to cry. And what she said when she was crying was, well, I did my best. And at that moment, the daughter saw that, yes, she had been a terrible mother, and she had done her best. Her best was awful, but it was her best. And my general impression is that mothers always do their best. And whatever they do, they're passing on what they learned, for better or worse, from generation to generation. And I look at my sister, whom I haven't had a lot of contact with, but she had some serious problems with her own psychology, but she set out for her own reasons to be a really good mother. And when I see her kids, my nephews, and they're all nephews, five of them, they are incredibly solid inside. There is a quiet, non-arrogant confidence that all of them, and they all have a great deal of confidence in their abilities to meet the world. And this, for me, from my perspective, that's pretty good child rearing, pretty good mothering. And so I think she was successful in being a really good mother. And why is this important? In Buddhism, we have what are called, they're known by various names. In the Theravadan tradition, Southeast Asia, they're known as the four Brahmaviharas, or the four abodes of Brahma, to translate that. In the Tibetan tradition and the Mahayana tradition, they're known as the four immeasurables. But they're four, what I call, higher emotions. Loving-kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. Now, the extent to which we are able to meet what arises in our experience is very, very closely related to the extent that we are able to experience loving-kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And I'm going to explain why in just a little bit. But what I want to do is to talk about how we come to know these. Now, in the Tibetan tradition, the standard way, or the one that you find in most of the texts, to develop loving kindness, is to recall the kindness of your mother. And there's a great example that's given about this thief, a bandit chief, who was a very cruel and savage man. And he had his gang, and they would, you know, attack caravans. And just plunder and kill everybody and take all everything that they were carrying. These were traders, so they were carrying lots of goods, sometimes, you know, gold and silver and silks. They would just steal it all. But in one of these raids on a caravan, the bandit chief slashed a pregnant horse, mare, with a sword. And the wound of the horse caused the mare to go into labor. And she gave birth to her foal. And even though she was dying from the sword cut, she started to lick the foal and nudge the foal to her to its feet. So it would live. And she just, you know, there she was dying, and she was being a mother. And the bandit chief saw this, and just, it so touched him that he gave up his raiding ways after that and started to practice. So we are encouraged in the Tibetan tradition to think about this. And yet, what I found, not only when I was in the three-year retreat, and we're all doing these meditations together, but also teaching people these meditations, is they would run exactly into the sentiment that Robertson Jeffers describes. You know, it didn't do a good job, Mom, and I'm paying the price. And there was tremendous negativity to work through. And this went even further. I remember in the three-year retreat, three-year retreat's quite demanding. And I was very fortunate because my parents, most of us were in our late 20s, early 30s at the most, when you're in the three-year retreat. And my parents had just said, well, this is what you want to do? Fine. But they were actually quite supportive of it, and they'd met my teacher. But several other people in the three-year retreat had come in very, very much against their parents' wishes. Like, what are you doing with your life? You are wasting it. You're going to sit on in a box for 3 years. You're not going to accomplish anything. What kind of skills and abilities will you develop, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You know. And actually, that is an expression of loving kindness from the parent, even though it may not sound like it. And what I found, what I observed, is that everybody had to work through their relationship with their parents at some point in the three-year retreat. And of course, you couldn't leave the three-year retreat to go and talk it out with them. You just had to sit there and deal with all of the stuff inside you. So the way that we are brought up makes a tremendous difference to us. And however it is, however it was for us, we keep in mind that it is the nature of mothers that they do their best, and that's it. The rest of it is our responsibility. Now, what makes this so important? The whole notion of mothering is used in the Theravadin tradition as a way of understanding these four emotions and practicing them. Loving kindness is taking care of the child, you know, providing her or him with what they need to live. So the mother provides a place for the fetus to grow, birth, milk, warmth, comfort, connection with the world, etc. All of these are experiences of loving kindness, or expressions of loving kindness. And without all of those, we die, very simply. We die. What loving kindness does is it gives us our first experience of not being separate from the world. That's putting it fairly deeply, but that's what it is. And we know this. How many of you at some point in your life, you know, probably when you're young, ran into some kind of difficulty and somebody extended some kindness to you with no strings attached? Anybody can remember something like that? Yeah. What was that like for you? Most of us remember that, whether it was a parent or an uncle or an aunt, maybe it was a school counselor or a teacher or somebody. Most of us remember that very, very vividly, because there we are and somebody is giving us a place in the world. That's what mothers do. And that's the essential gesture of loving kindness. When we're kind to somebody, no strings attached, we just extend that kindness, the number one thing we're saying to them is, you're a person. You're a person. And you have a place in this world. It's very, very important. The social expression of loving kindness is courtesy. Just treating people, each other, with good manners. And it goes a very, very long way. And then there's compassion. When we're very small, and we're running in the playground, and we trip over and fall, we have this strange experience. And we don't know how to relate to it. And the first thing we do is we look at our mother to get the clues. How do I relate to this new experience I've just had? Now, this continues throughout our life. I'm working with an executive at a media company here in Los Angeles, and I have a very close relationship with the head of HR, and she's brought me in. And in her first meeting with this executive, and she has a very close relationship with this executive, has been working with him for many years. Anytime there was a little hitch in our conversation, you know what he did? He looked to her to see how he should relate to this experience. It's exactly the same thing. So, and how our mother responds at that point is crucial. If she goes, oh, we go, oh, this was a bad thing. And now we relate to it as a bad thing. And then we start to cry, etc., etc. And then if our mother goes, look at you! And we go, oh, this is a good thing. And we pick ourselves up and go on playing. And the willingness to be with us in whatever we're experiencing, that's compassion. Particularly when what we're experiencing is pain. Not to fix the pain, not to make it all better, that's more the loving kindness part, but just to be with us. Long before I did the 3-year retreat, actually, to earn money to do 3-year retreat, I did a year of foster parenting and ran a home, and we had three kids there all the time, and one brothers that would come and go. And one of them was a 12, 13-year-old boy. Good kid. And one day there was a knock on the door, and I opened the door, and there was a policeman with this kid. He got picked up for shoplifting, which is, you know, something kids do. So, process everything, call into social work, etc., etc., etc. Get through all of that stuff. And by this time, it's like time for him to go to bed, so goes down. And he wasn't too happy with stuff. So I went down. His room was in the basement, and so I went down and sat down beside his bed. He was just lying there, and he was pretty unhappy about stuff. I said, life gets more difficult, doesn't it? He said, yeah. You want to talk about anything? No. So, two of us just sat there. He was lying on his bed, I was sitting beside it. For about 20 minutes. And I looked at him and said, you going to be okay tonight? He said, yeah. Thanks, Ken. Okay. There's just somebody who's willing to be with him in that pain. Now, how many times does your mother do this? And sometimes it's really, really hard, because when a child's in pain, basically mothers go berserk. All they want to do, that's everything, is just take that pain away. But sometimes they know that that's not the best thing for the child. The child actually needs to learn to relate to that. That's really, really hard sometimes. Really hard. Moving from the loving kindness to the compassion, where you're just with the child in the pain and not trying to make it, and by providing that space for them to learn how to relate to it. And a lot of that we learn from our mother. And then the next one is joy. How many of you can recall your mother or your parent or your father or whatever, or somebody celebrating success that you experienced? Okay. What was that like for you? Yesterday, I was having a dinner with a client who at her home, and she has a daughter. Now, her daughter likes to build things. So, and I've known these people for years. And so, hauled out this Erector set, you know, which is, nobody uses these days because you have all these nuts and bolts and washers and things. They're really intriguing. She said, I want to build a windmill. And this is one of the designs on the thing where they don't give you any instructions. They just give you the picture. So it took us a few hours. At the end of it, she was just felt so good about herself because she'd put this whole thing together. And when we have a success like that, when somebody takes joy in us exercising our ability, that is how we form a relationship with power. It is somebody else celebrating when we are successful in exercising our own abilities. That's how we form a relationship with power. Confidence, the ability to do things in the world. Well, guess who does that most of the time when we're young? Let me get to the fourth one, equanimity. So, the child starts off, the mother takes care of her needs, is with her in her suffering, is with her in her joy, celebrates her success. And through this, the child grows in ability and starts venturing out into the world. This is one of the more difficult periods of mother, because they have to let go and have confidence in the child's abilities. This is equanimity. And not judge. And just had an email question from this retreat I'm doing on tricycle. And this is exactly what the mother's anguish is. Her son is having a really difficult time in life. He's in his early 20s. And she wants to do something for him. But she doesn't know whether she should or not, etc. It's very, very difficult. But it's just a really, really uncomfortable, really, really painful for her. Because she doesn't know which way, how her son's going to be. And this is a very, very difficult thing, because every parent actually wants the best for their child. And when they see its child going in a direction that they think is going to be really not good for them, then they experience pain. And some parents are more skillful, some mothers are more skillful handling that, others are less skillful. But through it all, there's absolutely one thing in common. They all want the best for their child. And so these are some of the challenges they face. And the extent to which we know that we have a place in the world, are able to experience our own suffering without being freaked out by it, have confidence in our own abilities, etc. And are able to venture out into the world, these are all due to the extent to which our mother has exercised loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity. And she has done her best. And when it comes our turn, if it does come your turn as a mother, then it's the same thing. Yes, may have been like this mother who said, yeah, the worst mistake I've made in my life is not putting you in an orphanage. Well, at least she made that mistake. That was her best. we take responsibility because it's up to us now to work through whatever we have. But we recall and we remember and we transmit to the next generation everything that we found helpful and useful and beneficial to us from our mother. In this way, we actually improve the world. So that's what I had to say. You're welcome. Do you find that useful? Okay.
Unfettered Mind retains all rights to these podcasts. If you wish to use part or a whole podcast, please send an email to podcasts@unfetteredmind.org.